The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, A Boom Beyond the City. The Triangle's growth transforms Johnston, Chatham, and other outlying counties forever. And the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, The Ripple Effect. Major job announcements will transform both the Triangle's urban core and its surrounding counties. Written by Evan Hoopfer. The meeting passed the four-hour mark, and the Chatham County Board of Commissioners had just listened to plans for yet another housing development. The scene is familiar across the Triangle's small communities as they grapple with growth. This is the future, friends and neighbors, say Commissioner Jim Crawford during an August meeting. On the Eastern Seaboard, we are the hot zone. This is what we're in for, especially you, my young friend, he said as he pointed at fellow Commissioner Franklin Gomez Flores. This could be the rest of your life. Word is out about the Triangle's appeal to companies and residents looking for a high quality of life with a low cost of living, and the area has been on fire for years. Then this year dumped gasoline on the fire. Some of the world's largest companies are coming to the area. Apple's 3,000 jobs in Research Triangle Park, Google's 1,000 employees in Durham, Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnology's 725 jobs in Holly Springs, and a bevy of other major economic development projects announced recently will transform the Triangle. Small communities are preparing for the opportunities with the influx of new residents. Natalie Hawkins, the executive director of Moore County Partners in Progress, says the county could attract executives from companies such as Apple and Fujifilm to live there, especially if the hour commute is cut in frequency from 5 to 3 days a week in a hybrid work system, which is what Apple is considering for its employees. She sees potential for suppliers to follow those companies, too. If a large company goes to Raleigh, maybe they need a supplier or distributor that's in close proximity. I think we're primed for that type of business development and recruitment, Hawkins says. Moore County is not going to recruit the Apple or the Google, but there may be some information technology, consultants, or developers that could set up operations here in Moore County. The area, considered the Triangle, will become larger as growth spills into outlying areas. In fact, it's already started. Johnston County was the fastest-growing county in North Carolina during the 2010s. The continued influx of high-paying jobs will reshape how the outlying counties live, work, travel, and play, from Chatham County's housing market, the transportation needs of northern counties, and the supply chain in Johnston County. Even the storied Pinehurst Resort, which traces its roots back to the late 1890s, will evolve. In the next 5-10 years, you're going to see enormous growth, and we've already seen enormous growth in the outlying areas, says Mike Walden, professor emeritus and economist at NC State University. Housing boom hits Chatham. Because land is becoming so expensive in Wake, Durham, and Orange counties, home builders and buyers are seeking more affordable options, pushing development further away from the Triangle's core. If we don't do anything, house prices will become much more expensive, says David Berger, associate professor of economics at Duke University. We should definitely figure out a way to build more kinds of housing in the surrounding counties, downtown, everywhere. And while it's a familiar story that homes in the population centers of Raleigh and Durham are seeing surging prices, the smaller towns are seeing their populations explode and demand for homes rise. In the 30 years between 1990 and 2020, Apex, Holly Springs, and Fuquay Varina each went from fewer than 5,000 to at least 29,000 residents. Cary, meanwhile, transformed itself from a Raleigh suburb to an economic heavyweight in its own right. Chatham County is home to cheaper land and developers willing to invest in new home communities, including one of the largest master planned communities ever proposed in the Triangle. That's why, for the region's next phase of supercharged growth, look across Jordan Lake. I graduated from NC State in 71 and started a business in Cary. Cary was 4,200 people in 1971. Now they're 185,000, says Tim Smith, co-founder of Preston Development. Pittsboro is at 4,200 people. Pittsboro will be like Cary, as big as that in the next 40 years. Preston is the firm behind Chatham Park, which aims to have 22,000 residents and 22 million square feet of commercial and office space at full build-out, making it one of the largest master-planned communities on the East Coast. Pittsboro will be fundamentally reshaped, both in terms of size and feel, within Mosaic, which is being developed by Eco Group, led by local real estate veteran Kirk Bradley. A new apartment complex called The Guild is expected to be delivered in first quarter of 2023. Within 2 years, we'll have 1,000 apartments in Pittsboro, and they had nothing a year ago, Smith says. For any community to grow, they've got to have apartments for young people. In Chatham Park, out of our 22,000 units, we'll have over 4,000 apartments. Several other developments are sprouting up across Chatham County, and investment opportunities are presenting themselves in even the most remote parts of the county. A group of 10 local investors recently paid $1.97 million for a 230-acre farm in the Silk Hope area between Siler City and Pittsboro. Cows grazing on the land are allowed to stay for now, as Venkateswara Yendapalli, one of the investors, says there are no immediate plans to develop the land. But he said the purchase was made with an eye on the future. Keeping that growth in mind, we thought it was a good idea to invest, he says. Getting north. Growth in the Greater Triangle has not been equal. While the counties in the south of the triangle, such as Johnston, Chatham, and Lee, and Moore, exploded in population during the 2010s, the same was not true for the counties in the northern region. Granville County's population increased 1.8%, well below the state's 9.5% growth rate as a whole, according to U.S. Census data. Person, Vance, Warren, and Halifax counties lost residents. The northern county that bucked the trend was Franklin, which grew its population by 13.1%, or about 8,000 people. Leaders in northern counties point to a road project they hope will have big benefits for spurring economic activity in their communities, the East End Connector in Durham. The connector will link NC 147 and US 70. The North Carolina Department of Transportation is building a 1.25-mile freeway between the two highways and converting about 2.75 miles of US 70 to a freeway in the name of better traffic flow from the north to the triangle's core. At most points in the city of Roxborough, it is a half-hour drive to the interstate. This is one of the top questions asked from industry. What does access look like for us, says Sherry Wilborn, Person County Economic Development Director. With shaving time off from being able to access the interstate, that's going to make us more attractive for distribution, manufacturing, and for residents who want to commute. Officials broke ground on the project back in 2015, and the completion date has been pushed back several times because of bad weather and COVID-19. Now, the DOT is estimating the project will be open to traffic in December and fully complete by the spring. The agency cites potential benefits as alleviating traffic in downtown Durham and providing economic development opportunities up the I-85 corridor. That's going to bridge the gap between Raleigh and the rural community, Harry Mills, Economic Development Director for Granville County, says of the East End Connector. If you're coming from Vance County anywhere down the road, you can get on I-85 and not hit a stoplight until you get to the airport. Johnston's solution to lacking industrial space. A reason economic developers rejoice when they land the project, bringing thousands of new jobs, is other jobs that will follow too. Big employment centers act like job magnets. This happens when a supplier wants to be closer to a manufacturer to reduce logistics costs, and also when companies boost a region's reputation, such as when IBM planted its flag in RTP over 50 years ago. Leaders in the outlying counties are evaluating opportunities to attract the suppliers that will come to the Triangle as Apple, Google, and Fujifilm and others arrive. The upcoming Fujifilm facility in Holly Springs will be particularly beneficial to the area, economists say. The company plans to perform biologics manufacturing operations there. For every job in manufacturing, there are probably at least four jobs created in the local economy, if not more, says Rob Handfield, a professor who studies supply chain at NC State's Poole School of Management. Life sciences is in that same range, four or five jobs created for every job in the life sciences manufacturing area. A prime place suppliers could locate is Johnston County. The area added 47,000 residents in the 2010s and is home to major interstates that are vital in connecting links in the supply chain, such as I-95 and I-40, and the future 540 Southern Loop scheduled to come online this decade. There's just one problem. The thing we've lacked is having available product, says Chris Johnson, Johnston County's Economic Development Director. Industrial space is incredibly tight across the triangle, as warehouse vacancy levels stood at just 2.8% in the second quarter. down from 3.2% in the first quarter, according to TBJ's Space Quarterly publication. More industrial spaces coming to Johnston County. Adventure Development broke ground on Building 100 in Eastfield Business Park outside Selma in August, which will bring 135,000 square feet to the market when the shell is complete in March. But for attracting more industrial investment, the problem isn't demand, it's speed to market. That's why county leadership recently came up with an idea they hope will boost industrial development. Johnston leaders think their solution will give it a leg up when a supplier for one of these big companies is looking for a spot in the Triangle. The county will agree to lease a facility for 2 years or until developers can find a tenant, whichever comes first. This assures developers have a revenue stream for at least 2 years while the property is being marketed to a prospective tenant. Johnson says the idea came from Lee County and added the initiative was passed in the county's July budget. It allows us to partner with developers as opposed to us going out and buying land and then competing against the private sector, he says. An evolving Pinehurst. When Apple announced it was coming to RTP, Brian Mador immediately thought about how Pinehurst Resort could benefit. Mador is the membership sales manager at Pinehurst, one of the crown jewels of the Greater Triangle's recreation scene. He says his pitch to an Apple employee living in Carrier Apex would be to join a club there, and that could be a weekday or a weekend club. Then look at Pinehurst and say, that's our getaway club. We can take our kids to the beach club. We can go to the pool complex. Dad can go out and play and bring some clients to number two or number four, Mador says. An influx of high-earning residents coming to the Triangle will boost demand for the resort, which is coming off of a hot 18 months. Since the pandemic made golf one of the few forms of entertainment still available in a COVID-19 world, interest in becoming a member at Pinehurst soared. Mador says he gets around 120 to 130 inquiries per month about becoming a member. The amount of inquiries we're getting right now, I almost can't even keep up with those, he says. Pinehurst's membership base will continue to evolve, but the evolution started years ago. In 2017, rules were changed that allowed residents outside the village of Pinehurst to become members. Now, property owners within a 60-mile radius of Pinehurst can apply to become members. Mador notes the 60 miles is as the crow flies, meaning Cary, Apex, and some areas of Raleigh are eligible. Mador says Pinehurst has nearly 5,000 members today, and members are getting younger, too. More military families stationed at Fort Bragg are opting to live in Moore County, seeing as it's a 30-minute drive. We have 500 members under the age of 40 now, whereas 15, 20 years ago, it might have been fewer than 150, Mador says. Amenities were added to accommodate a younger membership. The pool complex and Lake Pinehurst opened in 2015, and Mador says the resort recently purchased a floating water park, the Jungle Float, which will be there next summer. Social events are changing, too. It's all geared toward families. It's movie nights, tie-dye shirt events, a lot of live music, he says. These examples show that even one of the most storied golf resorts in the world can evolve to fit the needs of a changing region. As Pinehurst Resort expands, it is actively looking at adjusting the prices of its initiation fees with golf privileges, which currently range from $25,000 to $45,000, Mador says. New members pay the initiation fee as well as monthly dues. He estimated the highest category could increase to at least $50,000 as soon as next year. Golf is still the beating heart of the Pinehurst area. Between Southern Pines, Pinehurst, Aberdeen, and other neighboring towns, there are more than 40 golf courses, from public to private clubs. Almost every course in the Greater Triangle has noticed a spike in rounds played in the past 18 months following the start of the pandemic. Now the question looms whether the same courses will be able to keep the new golfers engaged as the country opens up to other outdoor and indoor recreational activities, albeit deliberately. And the engagement perhaps starts with the young population. Mador recalls when he gave a tour to a group of real estate brokers recently while the resort was hosting the U.S. Kids Golf World Championship. During the tour, he looked out at the roughly 150 kids playing on the Cradle and Thistle Dew. What he saw were the future members of his resort and business leaders of his community that could call a place like Moore County home as development spreads across the Greater Triangle. I joked to the brokers and said, you know what I see here? This is job security, Mador says. And now we turn to our continuing series, 52 Shades of Success. The headline, Fighting for DEI, How Durham App Development Boss Don Shin is Spotlighting Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the 52-week project showcases accomplishments, challenges, and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by people of color, women, immigrants, veterans, representatives from the LGBTQ plus community, and a few other groups forwarding the mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. The project also will delve into important trends and issues relating to DEI. Don Shin can't help but recall late folk singer Woody Guthrie's lyric, "This land is your land, this land is my land." In the past few years, I've shed many tears realizing that it's still not yet true, at least from the perspective of many of my countrymen and countrywomen, says Shin, CEO and president of Crosscom, the software development and consulting firm he founded in 1998 while still an undergraduate at Duke University. Shin, whose parents emigrated from South Korea, was born in Michigan. His heritage and his upbringing as a first-generation Asian American have intrinsically influenced his business, the culture of his company, and his commitment to diversity. "This is my native country and the only country I've ever truly known, but I grew up in a household that was influenced by East Asian values and an East Asian outlook on culture. I had to simultaneously flow within a mainstream perspective and an ethnic minority perspective. I had to be culturally bilingual, so to speak," he says. "It is different today, and I truly believe that we are closer than we have ever been to the possibility of inclusion, at least within some communities and areas of this country. In many ways, I resented being different as I was growing up. I wasn't proud of my ethnic heritage because we were all trying to fit into what was accepted in mainstream. As a young adult, I started to appreciate the unique perspective of growing up in an ethnic household, that I didn't have to see everything in the world through one lens, but could see any given situation from multiple angles. Now I am extremely thankful for my ethnic heritage." As a child, that dual perspective was challenging. As the CEO of an innovation-leaning technology company, the ability to see the world through multiple lenses is an advantage. A naturally eloquent and articulate speaker, Shin pauses frequently as he discusses the sensitive topics of diversity and inclusion in the workplace and smoldering race relations across society. "I wanted to believe in America as a melting pot, yet I didn't see it on the playground, in the interactions with white children who implicitly assumed they had a greater stake in our country or belonged more than I did," Shin recalls. "We still have those fundamental problems today, but at least the conversation is more direct, both for those who are championing diversity and those that dismiss it. I would rather have a more straightforward conversation than subtlety." After graduating from Duke, Shin relocated to New York City to start a Crosscom branch office, a move motivated in part by the business climate that existed in Durham in the early 2000s, where he says there were fewer businesses looking for cutting-edge web and mobile app development. For several years, he commuted regularly, bringing projects from New York City to the Crosscom team in Durham. In the late 2000s, the commute shifted as he relocated to Austin, Texas, still running Crosscom from afar, but always feeling a personal bond with the Bull City. "My heart has always been in Durham, so 3 years ago, my wife and I decided to move back. It's such a special thing to be able to offer my children a diverse environment to grow up in as a person of color," Shin says. "Austin has pockets of diversity, but they feel relatively siloed off, and it's still a predominantly white culture. Durham feels more authentic in its embrace of diversity, in large part due to its unique history and heritage as a place for diverse entrepreneurship." As a young entrepreneur attending Leadership Durham, Shin learned about the city's heritage of black entrepreneurship. "Durham is changing very quickly, but I want to see the heritage of diverse entrepreneurship preserved," he says. That preservation requires confronting both the past and the present frictions in race relations. "A lot of the challenges that this country has around the topic of race will only begin to be resolved when we address the original sin of slavery," Shin says. "And my fate as a non-white but fully American citizen is investing in seeing reconciliation happen and equality ring true, and not just for Asians, because when claims of white supremacy or a white stake in the future of this nation are trumpeted, it is the fate of all of our children that are impacted. Although I am not black, I must be a part of this. I must do what I can to have a positive impact on my local community, my city, and my state. As a business owner, I must encourage black leadership in business, starting with my own sphere of influence and seeing how that can be extended incrementally over time." Within his company, Shin makes every effort to bring diverse voices to the table, seeking first to hire the right person for the job, but always digging deeper when evaluating candidates to learn each individual's personal background. Since March 2020, Crosscom has nearly doubled its headcount to 25 employees, and revenue this year is expected to top $3 million, nearly triple the pre-pandemic figure of $1.3 million. One of his concerns is that executive decisions in many companies are made without the benefit of open and honest conversations. I love that my director of marketing is black and that I can have conversations on a leadership level about these topics, Shin says. Part of why I wanted diverse voices at the table is so that I could have honest, vulnerable conversations. Another growing concern is that implicit bias may be inadvertently built into the technology used to guide the decision-making process. Philippe Charles, Crosscom's director of marketing, says there are two considerations for diversity within the tech industry. There is the diversity of people who work in the industry, and there is the diversity of the people impacted, he says. Don and I have talked about social media, that the algorithms are designed to keep people in echo chambers. They are designed to reward people for celebrating people who think just like them. Their conversations explore how responsible technology can help make the world a better place. Diverse perspectives need to be incorporated into the systems that guide decision-making behavior, and in the case of machine learning, the training data needs to reflect diversity, they say. Machine learning is all about making predictions, which is, in essence, what prejudice is about, Shin says. Prejudice makes assumptions based upon hearsay or anecdotes or perhaps a limited sample set of data. When you train a machine learning model to recognize what a crime scene looks like or what dangerous people look like, the perspectives and judgments of the people deciding which data is used gets transferred into the machine learning prediction engines. That is how machine learning comes to adopt the same prejudices, implicit or subconscious, as those who are curating the training data. While he's excited to talk about Crosscom's technology, what Charles values most about the company is its inherent respect for diversity. The best way to fully respect people and their unique selves at work is to respect who they are outside of work. That's part of Crosscom's magic, that there is flexibility in how we work. Creating the supportive culture has been an intentional process at Crosscom. We make sure people have space to not only have meaningful work, but also meaningful lives outside of work, Shin says. That is probably a prerequisite for diversity. And in the 52 Shades of Success section, there's also a first-hand account column written by Sanjay Paul, who is the current chair of CED and a global managing director at Accenture. The headline, My Personal Witness to the Many Diverse Strengths of the Triangle Area. In the spring of 1994, when I was finishing up my MS in computer engineering at Louisiana State University, I was asked to fly to Raleigh for an interview with Cisco Systems, which was then a rising Silicon Valley-based company. Candidly, I'd never even heard of Raleigh, though quick research informed me that Research Triangle Park has some of the top universities in the country and a high number of PhD graduates. The rest is history. I joined Cisco in May 1994, moved to Raleigh, and have really enjoyed the amazing progress the Triangle has made since the days when Davis Drive was not much more than a dirt road. For almost 25 years now, I have lived in the Triangle area and have witnessed its amazing growth. The core question that every global international company strategizes over is, what business strategy can we utilize to have a larger presence in the U.S. and better serve our major clients with our offerings and capabilities? Talent, cost of living, and above all, constant evolution and progress have enabled the Triangle area to continue as a hotspot for the expansion of some of the largest companies. It is no surprise that over the last 60 years, the Triangle has garnered a reputation as a top place for business, attracting talent and businesses from across the globe. This area continues to create a legacy of high-caliber talent, a concentration of innovation, a stable and affordable business climate, and vibrant communities. In 2011, I was given a business mission to transform global delivery and execution for $3 billion businesses, which had some of the largest clients in the Americas and Europe. In those days, global delivery really meant outsourcing, offshoring. As I dug deeper, I concluded that for me to be able to deliver the expected results, one of the main priorities I would have would be to increase the presence of talent and skills in RTP. The key attributes that have helped drive effective collaboration among global teams were client satisfaction and diverse availability of talent. These attributes also served the talent pool, which required clearances to serve highly regulated environments. Some of the most important attributes of organizations that have grown successfully in this region involve having the right leadership culture and focus on employees and clients. I have seen, built, and experienced organizations where diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, are critical components of workplace culture. It fuels increased engagement, productivity, and innovation. Serving as a board member and now chair of the Council for Entrepreneurial Development, or CED, I have seen how the budding entrepreneurial ecosystem with several hundred startups that are thriving in technology and life sciences have attracted talent as well as led to the culture to drive DEI initiatives. With large enterprises such as Apple and Google committed to growing their presence by further boosting investments in a variety of early stage companies and additionally continuing to attract a diverse talent pool to relocate to the region, we can only expect the Triangle area to exponentially grow. If I tried to predict the future, I would say that we will continue to see many Fortune 500 companies grow in the region and start to base their headquarters here. We will see many more industries boom, such as healthcare, manufacturing, and delivery centers. In the next 25 years, the ever-thriving Triangle, with a population rich in talent from all sorts of backgrounds, will continue to work toward the common goal of global collaboration to achieve success. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Slice of history for sale. The value of homes across the coast has skyrocketed in recent years, and now a historic home on South Carolina's Pawleys Island is on the market for a big price. Pawleys Island is known for its homes that date to before the Civil War, when South Carolina plantation owners built homes on the island to escape the heat and malaria. John LaBruce, who owned Oak Hill Plantation in nearby Georgetown, built a home there in 1858. The home was sold to the Lemon family in 1952 and is now on the market. Christie's International Real Estate is listing the house at 546 Myrtle Avenue for $4.25 million. The house is typical of similar surviving homes on Pawleys, as a low-slung home nestled among live oaks, but what's particularly interesting is two small structures behind the main house are believed to be former slave cabins and a reminder of the South's dichotomy. The property is still used as a rental, and any purchaser has to honor rentals for the next 3 months. Holt Brothers Land Freedom Park Job. Work on the long-planned North Carolina Freedom Park took a big step forward in September when the group behind the project announced it named Holt Brothers Construction to build the park. The group made the announcement earlier this week, saying that work is expected to begin soon and will wrap up next year. While planning for the park and monument began in 2002, it's exciting to begin construction on the Beacon of Freedom, which will be the highlight of North Carolina Freedom Park, said Senator Natalie Murdoch, North Carolina Freedom Park campaign coordinator. We are also continuing to partner with Black-owned and operated companies, as the project is truly about the Black experience, and we have an opportunity to make Black-owned businesses a part of this work. North Carolina town misses out on $3 million investment. Cellular giant T-Mobile passed over a Harnett County town for a prize that would have resulted in a $3 million investment centered on 5G upgrades for a small U.S. city or town. Dunn, with a population of about 9,700, was named one of 10 finalists this summer out of thousands of applicants in the T-Mobile Hometown Techover Contest. But in the end, the company went with Woodstock, Illinois, as the small town, it says, will be the crown jewel of 5G for small towns in America. Woodstock receives a $200,000 grant, 5G network enhancements, improvements to a Little League baseball field, and a free concert featuring country music group Florida Georgia Line. NIL deals start rolling in. Aaron Mattson is majoring in advertising and public relations at UNC Chapel Hill, and it turns out the senior is pretty astute at promoting herself. Mattson, from Chads Ford, Pennsylvania, also happens to be the best college field hockey player in the country. And while quarterbacks and basketball players are getting much of the attention, as college athletes can now market themselves in name, image, and likeness, or NIL, deals, many of the players in Olympic sports are jumping in as well. Mattson, for example, is doing commercials for Chapel Hill Tire. And she even held an autograph session one Saturday afternoon at Chapel Hill Sportswear. It's a sign that in this new world of sports, there's plenty of room for all kinds of athletes. Durham Company gets big break. A Durham startup in the legal field is getting a big opportunity. Courtroom 5, which provides help for litigants in civil court without a lawyer, is being showcased as one of the top technology companies in the Southeast at the Venture Atlanta 2021 event, October 2nd through 21. Courtroom 5 was one of the companies selected out of a record 400 applicants for a chance to pitch their company in front of top investment firms. Courtroom 5 members get video courses, workshops, legal forms, and more to help them navigate the legal system. Sonia Ebron, co-founder of Courtroom 5, calls the chance to pitch in Atlanta an incredible honor. And finally, Craft Beer Tour visits the Oak City. A new curated craft beer tour is set to debut in the Triangle October 1. Two longtime friends and homebrewers, Davin Jackson and Michael Schramm, have launched City Brew Tours Raleigh to give beer fans expanded access to local breweries. Jackson, who formerly worked at Bad Daddy's Burger Bar, is bringing the multi-city franchise to Raleigh, where craft beer tourism isn't new, but it has grown in popularity in recent years. The full-length 5-hour, $99 per person, and a shorter 3.5-hour tour, $70 per person, are available and include a guided experience with a behind-the-scenes look at the brewing process, snacks, and transportation. Private tours also may be booked. The tours are available in at least a dozen other cities in the U.S., but this is the second to open in North Carolina in 2021 outside of Charlotte. And now we turn to the On Finance and Tech page written by Lauren Onasorge. Pappas Capital launches fund targeting Asia. A $200 million fund out of Durham's Pappas Capital is eyeing innovation in Asia. The Asia Innovation Fund closed on September 17. Filing show with four investors. Pappas Capital founder Art Pappas says the fund is a way to tap into innovation in China, Hong Kong, and Singapore. The idea has its origins in late 2019, then COVID-19 happened. Pappas says that even prior to his 2019 trip to Asia, it was clear China, Hong Kong, and Singapore would be significant when it comes to the future of innovations, and he wanted in. Fidelity is targeting Triangle for talent. Fidelity Investments announced plans to hire 1,500 workers in RTP at its new personal finance center. The site lead, Rob Mertis, says the firm will target multiple sectors, including the hospitality arena, as these are entry-level jobs that do not require any licensure at hire. "We're looking for people with strong customer service skills that are really interested in helping people," Mertis says. The rest of it, from licensures to finance prowess, that can come later, he says. "We traditionally didn't have this unit here," Mertis says. "It's allowed us to tap into a new pool of candidates that may be interested in building a customer services or a financial services career. And that means waiters, retail clerks, and hotel associates, people with a customer service bent, looking for something new." Mertis says Fidelity is currently interviewing several in the sector, a fact that could further squeeze a tight labor market for hospitality. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Joe DeSimone, professor at Stanford University and professor emeritus at UNC Chapel Hill, who is leading a research collaboration on creating a vaccine patch, no syringe jab required. "We have too many in the population not getting the vaccine. It feels like if we could lower the anxiety level, that should play a big role." And finally, a big number, 75,000. That's how many jobs as of September were on the line for North Carolina, according to Chris Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. His group is working on 236 active projects. If they won all of them, that would mean $97.8 billion in new capital investments in the state. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth section, written by Evan Hoopfer. Development targets New Bern land, Weyerhaeuser to develop 3,000 acres near the city. For basically any other company, the West New Bern development would be considered massive, but timber giant Weyerhaeuser owns 540,000 acres of timberland in North Carolina alone. "The term massive, I guess it just depends on scale," says Rose Fagler, economic development manager for Seattle-based Weyerhaeuser, which has a real estate business unit that has developed several master planned communities in the southeast. Still, West New Bern will help reshape Craven County and the surrounding area at the mouth of the Neuse River along the North Carolina coast. Phase 1 calls for up to 1,500 residences, as well as room for retail and restaurant space. The entire West New Bern development is slated to be 3,000 acres. As the development gets ready to welcome its first residents later this year, Weyerhaeuser recently brought on CBRE Raleigh's Land Services and Retail Services groups to handle the marketing for the project. Charlie Coyne, head of the CBRE group, says the team is looking at retail options for the community, such as grocery stores, restaurants, breweries, and tap rooms. Food and beverage is a big part of the first phase, he says. He adds that opportunities exist for small businesses looking for office space, as well as a large corporate office. There are 3,000 acres, so there's a lot of room, he says. As for residential development, work on homes is progressing quickly. Comet West, New Bern, will include 224 apartments, and the first tenants are expected to move in around Thanksgiving. A national home building giant, D.R. Horton, has broken ground on 63 single-family homes, with the first residents expected to move in around Christmas, Fagler says. Triangle North Executive Airport gets $11.9 million grant. Triangle North Executive Airport has been steadily growing for years, and an $11.9 million grant will help the airport continue expanding. The airport, located about 6 miles south of Lewisburg in Franklin County, will use the grant for a full airfield pavement rehabilitation. The grant includes both state and federal funding, says Bo Carson, airport director, as well as a local match of about $420,000, which is included in the $11.9 million figure. We're going to get an apron expansion as well, he says. The apron is where planes park or sit to wait on refueling. And in a section called She Said It, we have a quote from Dr. Shauna Guthrie, who opened Sunflower Direct Primary Care earlier this year in downtown Henderson. It's the only DPC facility in the Vance County, Granville County area. It's great for individuals who have insurance, but maybe their insurance isn't that great. Or it's for individuals who have good insurance, but they don't like that rushed feeling when they do see their provider. And finally, a big number, 161. The number of residential units being planned for the Henderson Farms housing development to be located in between Pittsboro and Chapel Hill along Highway 15501. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page in the Triangle Business Journal, written by Caleb Harshberger. $63 million deal for Raleigh Office Complex. On September 20, an affiliate of Charlotte-based Ferncroft Capital, with the support of some passive investment partners, paid $63 million for a more than 450,000-square-foot office complex off Corporate Center Drive that's fully leased to Wells Fargo. The property is situated on 40.5 acres at 1,000 and 1,100 Corporate Center Drive, across the road from Drive Shack, a golf and entertainment venue similar to Topgolf. Built in 1996, the property features 454,838 square feet across a three-story complex. Wells Fargo has fully leased the property since it opened. The sale comes months after the city of Raleigh approved a rezoning request from the seller, allowing for up to 7 stories of commercial mixed-use development. Developer buys Frank Harmon Design Building. A Raleigh developer has bought a Frank Harmon-designed office building in Raleigh for its new headquarters. On September 16, Wigeon Capital, spelled W-I-G-E-O-N, paid $2.25 million for the office building at 629 Oberlin Road, near the Village District, formerly Cameron Village. The 8,811-square-foot building will serve as the company's new base of operations. The building is situated on a half an acre at the corner of Bedford Avenue and Oberlin Road, north of the Harris Teeter in the Village District. The seller is an LLC controlled by the Daniels family, which developed the building with Raleigh architect Frank Harmon in 1997. Plan calls for 68 townhomes near downtown. Developer Alchemy Properties South has filed plans for the towns at Greystone, calling for 68 townhomes near downtown Durham. The property is situated on 3.9 acres at 518 Moorhead Avenue on the south side of the Durham Freeway near the American Tobacco campus. And finally, Passage looks to build a 4-story building in Raleigh. Passage Homes is gearing up to file a rezoning request with the city of Raleigh in the coming months to allow for an apartment community up to 4 stories tall. CEO Seth Friedman says the community will be limited to residents 55 and older and making below the area median income. The site is situated on 3.4 acres across three parcels at 500 and 506 Hoke Street and 1412 Garner Road west of Carnegie Middle School. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page written by Erica Wells. Downtown adds new hotel. AC Hotel opens in Raleigh after long construction delays. A hotel in Glenwood South is welcoming guests after the pandemic jeopardized its opening. The AC Hotel Raleigh Downtown at 9 Glenwood Avenue officially opened September 24 following construction delays last year. Raleigh-based Summit Hospitality Group Limited operates the seven-story, 146-room hotel as part of the AC Hotels by Marriott line. "It's a very special day because we've been through a pandemic and a lot in the past year and a half," Summit CEO R. Doyle Parrish says. "This hotel has struggled with the supply chain issues in our economy, but the team here has pulled together and the Marriott has come through, so we're very excited to be opening." Summit Hospitality Group purchased the property, which was previously a collection of office buildings, for $4 million in 2018, and construction began in February 2020, but was interrupted by the onset of the coronavirus. "It put a shock into our goals, but we continued to develop because we were at the point of no return," Parrish says. "We're a little late in opening the hotel. We're about 3 months later than we hoped to be, and we attribute most of that to the pandemic." The total investment was about $40 million for the hotel, which is owned by Glenwood Willard Hotel, LLC of Raleigh. Recovery has been slow for the hospitality industry in Wake County, as hotel occupancy in the second quarter reached 52% and over 11% increase year-to-date, according to the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau. Despite weak business travel activity, leisure travel is still strong, Parrish says. The AC Hotel Raleigh Downtown is the 91st location in the AC Hotels brand, which is focused on design as well as function. AC Hotels was launched in 1999 in Madrid, Spain, and its hotels around the world have a Spanish influence. Raleigh Barbecue Digs sold for $1.2 million. The building that houses a barbecue restaurant in Raleigh has been sold for $1.2 million amid a dispute over a nearby lot the business has used for customer parking. Old Time Barbecue space at 6309 Hillsborough Street, just east of Interstate 40, was purchased by Mogadis Incorporated of Raleigh on August 16, according to Wake County deed records. Cashflow Real Estate, LLC, an affiliate of a Texas-based company, sold the over 1,300-square-foot building. The sale comes as Old Time Barbecue expressed concerns on social media about losing its extra parking space, a gravel lot across the street from the restaurant, after a verbal agreement ended with the North Carolina Railroad Company, which owns the lot. The Railroad Company administration and the restaurant failed to negotiate a new rate for renting the 0.14-acre gravel lot, according to the social media post, which said NCRC wants $7,000 a year. And in a section called She Said It, a quote from Kelly Chichirprof on opening the Bottle Theory Craft Brewery, craft beer and wine in Apex. That's Bottle Theory Craft Beer and Wine in Apex. "There's so many amazing breweries in the Triangle, so we wanted to celebrate what's already here rather than building something new. We wanted a place where we could have the best beer from North Carolina and the best wine from around the world." And finally, a big number, $55 billion. That's the amount U.S. consumers are expected to spend in the buy now, pay later market in 2021 as they shift from layaway, according to data from Statista. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. First, we read the column written by Jennifer Toll Whiteside, who is the president and CEO of the North Carolina Community Foundation. The headline, Nonprofit Boards Need to Plan for Executive Director Departure. Dear nonprofit board member, I have some news to share. Your executive director is leaving the organization. As a nonprofit board member, receiving this news can be unexpected. However, at some point, the head of your organization will move on to something new. In fact, estimates suggest that up to 50% of U.S. nonprofit leaders will leave their positions in the next 5 to 10 years. This change in nonprofit leadership is converging with the Great Resignation, the record-breaking wave of people leaving their jobs. As pandemic life continues, people are rethinking what work means to them, how they are valued, and how they spend their time. In April 2021 alone, the U.S. Labor Department reported a record 4 million people quit their jobs, while studies suggest 40% of employees are contemplating a job change. Whether planned or abrupt, executive transitions are inevitable and require strong board leadership and direction. Successfully managing the departure as an executive, as well as the recruitment, hiring, and installation of a new one, is complicated and time-consuming. The first step is successfully navigating this change is to have a succession or transition plan in place before the executive leaves. A succession plan is an indication of strong and thoughtful leadership. Developing such a plan requires open dialogue, clear communication, and a high degree of trust between the board and the executive director. Making this an annual conversation may help remove the stigma or fear around these kinds of conversations. Critical to the success of a succession plan is understanding the challenges and opportunities an organization faces in the years ahead. Ideally, board and staff leadership have developed a strategic plan and are working to meet long-term goals and outcomes. If not, succession planning is a good time to create a roadmap to guide the organization's future direction. Then, when a departure is announced, the board will have a clear idea of what is needed to take the nonprofit into its next phase. And don't forget about the next wave of leaders. Effective succession planning includes identifying and providing leadership development opportunities to staff and board members so that the organization will have a deeper bench of future leaders. DHIC Incorporated, a Triangle nonprofit that provides affordable homes and opportunities, provides a solid model for effective succession planning. Since 1984, Greg Warren has served as president of DHIC. More than 4 years before publicly announcing his retirement, Greg and the DHIC board began preparations. DHIC was fortunate to secure great training for board members from NeighborWorks America and the Housing Partnership Network, Warren says. We focused on board leadership and identified a process to secure a new leader in a manner that gave existing staff the opportunity to directly participate and refine the selection process. Beth Voltz, who served as board chair during the transition, says, having a formal succession plan in place, including clear timelines and processes to follow, made what could have been a difficult process much easier. The board engaged a search firm with affordable housing expertise and a national reach, and with thoughtful input from staff, selected Yolanda Winstead as the new CEO and president in June 2020. Winstead was both an insider and an outsider, having worked at DHIC more than 20 years earlier and holding increasingly responsible positions at two similar organizations. Now more than ever, succession planning is the key element of thoughtful board leadership and action. And in the nonprofit briefs, Triangle School honored for promoting fitness. Trinity School of Durham in Chapel Hill is the Aspen Institute's $20,000 winner in the private school category, an award that honors the school for growing sports and physical activity participation for all students. The school was chosen for its personalized four-year athletic plan for students, similar to a four-year academic plan. Trinity School will be featured in the Aspen Institute's new report called Sport for All, Play for Life, a playbook to develop every student through sports, along with three other finalists. These findings will culminate in a final report to be released in 2022 that features three additional school types and will include systems-level recommendations that can drive progress for high school sports. WGUNC announces scholarships for military. WGU North Carolina has offered scholarships exclusively for the military community in North Carolina for the third straight year. The scholarships offer $2,500 in tuition credit. This year, the winners are Yobia Blakely, Raleigh, Kendra Carmichael, Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, Carly Cooper, Richlands, Steve Johnson of Charlotte, Sarah Odell from Topton, Marissa Ortega from Fort Bragg, and Sarah Polanco from Jacksonville. Winners are credited with $625 per term, renewable for up to four terms. And finally, Blue Cross NC forms new advisory committee to help improve foster care. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina has formed a new foster care advisory council to help ensure that those in foster care are receiving quality trauma-informed care and treatment. The council is comprised of 7 leaders with diverse professional and personal experience in foster care, behavioral health, and family welfare. Our goal is to create a more seamless system that addresses the particular physical and mental health care challenges facing North Carolina's foster children and families, says Fran Gary, Senior Vice President of Government Markets for Blue Cross NC. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Borrow Your Money Now Before It's Too Late. For businesses coming off the rush from access to all the government money, here's a cautionary note. It's time to reload. In the past 18 months, as we have reported, so much government money doused the financial ecosystem that most businesses really did not have to worry about cash or capital. At the same time, for the retail, entertainment, and hospitality industries, the severe lack of customers did more damage to quality of life than a company's balance sheet. Because of muted demand, loan volumes fell across the system, and now ridiculous amount of cash assets are now parked in the books of major financial institutions. Thanks to the Federal Reserve and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, we can now quantify the extent of money that is not in play for robust economic growth. As of August, U.S. commercial banks have some $4 trillion in cash assets parked on the books, a more than 49% increase from August 2020, when banks held $2.74 trillion in cash assets. But what about the commercial and industrial C&I loan portfolio? Surely as the economy started opening up, lenders opened up their purse strings, right? No, they did not. At least not according to the cumulative numbers. As of August, commercial banks had $2.4 trillion in C&I loans on their balance sheets. In August 2020, the comparable number was $2.75 trillion, so loan volume actually has gone down. Now some banks would argue they are ready to make loans, but the demand is simply not there. That sentiment holds some value because of the federal stimulus and incentive programs directed at businesses during most of 2020 and the first 6 months of 2021. But last week, the Federal Reserve indicated that things are about to change in terms of monetary supply and the price of capital. Before that happens, businesses may be better off readying their books with some extra capital through cheap borrowing. Banks have the money to loan now, but economic conditions in the coming quarters will decide whether banks such as J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Truist, and Wells Fargo will keep their lending doors wide open. In fact, because of the abundance of sublease office space in U.S. communities, banks already have started turning off the spigot on loans tied to office towers. There's also another element being played out that eventually we'll see fewer banks in the next couple of years, and that would change how business owners work with their banks. Thanks mainly to the U.S. Paycheck Protection Program, we saw thousands of new lenders emerge within our financial system who worked with businesses in a speedy fashion to get them the taxpayer money quick without much hassle. Those same institutions are now pairing up with tech giants such as Google and Apple to create a cloud-based financial system that operates on technology, algorithms, and artificial intelligence. Guess who's going to lose out in the end? Smaller banks. Community banks and regional banks may not have the money to make massive tech upgrades to match the online disruptors, but big banks have the money and scale to match the trend. That alone will accelerate the bank consolidation that started early this year. Online financial research outfit Dealogic estimates banks already have announced $54 billion in mergers, almost at the same pace as in 2008 to 2009 when banks were being forced to merge and avoid collapse. So market dynamics are changing, and there likely will be fewer but bigger lenders, and that can't be good news for borrowers. Better to shore up those coffers even when you really don't need it, because the lending market surely is going to change. And also on the Viewpoint page, we'll read the guest column written by John Hood, who is the John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, There is No Such Thing as a Free Ride. The latest news about North Carolina transportation was no surprise. In a pattern all too familiar, our leaders have planned for and promised more highway projects that can be financed with current revenue sources. The latest estimate of the gap was, however, staggering. For projects already committed, that is scheduled to be initiated early in the state's 2024 to 2033 plan, the gap between projected revenues and expenses is about $7 billion over the original $24 billion estimate, according to the latest update from the North Carolina Department of Transportation. And if the list is expanded to include all the originally anticipated projects, the funding gap rises to $13 billion. I've written many times about the defects of our current system for funding highways, which relies too much on per-gallon taxes in a world of improving gas mileage and a growing fleet of electric vehicles. North Carolina needs to figure out the most economical way of moving toward charging motorists by actual usage, not gas consumed. That means adopting some combination of tolling, new highway capacity, and replacing the gas tax with a mileage-based user fee. You don't like those options? Believe me, I understand, but the alternatives for financing our roads are worse. Higher gas taxes, bigger federal deficits, and cross-subsidies from general taxes that sever the link between usage and revenue. But while state leaders understandably reacted to the latest DOT report by debating those revenue options, there is no practical way forward that will close a $24 billion funding gap. To be blunt, some of the highway projects on the drawing board are not going to be completed by 2033. Even in our increasingly connected world, highways remain the primary arteries of commuting and commerce. At earlier stages in the expansion of automobility, spanning much of the 20th century, the cost of building and maintaining the road network was recouped many times over in economic and social benefits. Plenty of new projects are still likely to be cost-effective too, but there is no question that investing in highways, like investing in anything else, is subject to diminishing returns. And due to time, we'll skip to the conclusion of the article. So policymakers need to tackle it at both ends. They should adopt a mix of use fees and tolls that the John Locke report from May suggests. They should also assemble a long list of projects that DOT will agree to defer past 2023. Realism is required here. And we'll stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.